Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You're tuned in to Modus Operandi. A coup in Niger that could send shockwaves across the region. The balance of power across West Africa up for grabs as a populist uprising leaves the Western-backed ECOWAS at odds with one another. Today, we'll discuss the simmering tensions that led up to this new situation in Niger. All right, let's get into the MO. A top 10 producer of uranium, seventh to be exact. Yet the democratically elected government overseeing a population who, according to the World Bank, has a roughly 42% extreme poverty rate. That's some 10 million people in Niger out of about 28 million who go hungry regularly, who have no access to sanitation, schools, and so forth. This after approximately 40 years of French colonization through much of the 20th century and currently serving as a drone base for U.S. AFRICOM. Now, with almost no results for an improvement in the standard of living, it would appear the military coup in Niger is backed by popular civilian support. So joining us now to break down the history of Niger and this region and just how we got to this situation is Kofi Kouakou. Kofi is an African affairs analyst, formerly of the World Bank. He is now a senior fellow at the Center for Africa-China Studies at the University of Johannesburg. Thank you so much for joining us, Kofi. First, let's go back to late July. The Nigerian Presidential Guard, led by Brigadier General Abdou Rahman Tishiani and Colonel Major Amadou Abdurrahman, led a coup to overthrow President Mohamed Bazoum. First, for the viewers, walk us through that coup and just who these military leaders are behind this coup.
Well, I always say that context governs meaning. And in this time, especially in Niger, it is always good to get a sense of history, but I won't bore your audience with that long, if you want, context. But what is important is that Niger is a country that's seen so many coups since the first president, Amani Diori, in the 60s, that led the country where it is today. And by and large, strong men and strong military have ruled the Niger. And so what happened late July was the symptomatic nature of such a context. So when the coup leaders who took over now, the main one, of course, General Tchiani, it was and is still, well, now that he's a president, but he was the head of the Presidential Guard. And then, of course, coming next to him is his partner. And this is where they are. Their role has been really, they've played along with the president for many, many years. And I think, by and large, they haven't been happy with two things, as they've announced themselves saying. The first one is the sense that the partnership and at least the governing element of the president who was deposed, Mohamed Bazoum, didn't deal with first decisively against terrorism in Niger. The second was that the sovereignty of Niger was not really in the hands of Nigerians. And I must say, there's a slight difference between Niger or Nigerians and Nigerians. We're hearing many people saying Niger. It's really not right because it doesn't help make the difference with Nigeria or Nigerians. And this is what's happened. So these two now officers are now running the country. They're now still holding the president, Mohamed Bazoum, and keeping him in hostage.
Now, as you just alluded to earlier, Niger is no stranger to coup attempts. They've had at least six coups since 1974. The most recent one before this was in 2021, but none have received the same media coverage as this latest coup. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, it's very, very important because the context within which we are today has a very powerful geopolitical, if you want, angle, and that's one of the reasons. And it does because external powers, especially France and the United States, are involved in Niger because they've been there. They have huge interests. France used to be the former colonizer of Niger. Many of us still believe that Niger is still colonized by France anyway, because they've been there for so long, since the, you know, about 100 years ago. And then France also uses the natural resources of Niger, especially uranium. And you probably, your audience probably knows that Niger is the seventh producer of uranium in the world. I think they produce about 2,000 tons a year. And so, and Russia, I think, produces 2,500 tons. This is big. So Niger being one of those huge resource areas, and the resources of this uranium has been used by France to power its energy in France, of course, also its industry, but also provide electricity to its citizen. I mean, the power that goes to the Eiffel Tower is extraordinary. They're coming from most of the nuclear central powers of France, fueled by Nigerians' uranium. But what is also paradoxical and sad is that while, you know, France is powering its Eiffel Towers and its cities with Nigerian energy fuel uranium, the people in Niger have very little electricity. And this is a sad part that puts it really in the face of France. Now, the second part is America. America also is now established. But before I go to America, it's also important to signal that France is about 8 military bases strewn all over Niger to control the resources, but also control the power and still become and remain. For the United States has made Niger a very important basis officially to fight terrorism and execute its counterterrorism strategy. Two powerful bases of drones, but also more than 1,100 troops there, huge bases. And of course, those bases really give strength to the government that's in power, that has just been deposed, of Dr. Mohamed Bazoum. And that is exactly what has made this coup as important, if not more important than the other coups in the region, because of the presence of France, and especially the United States.
All right, so let's explore the French influence there. The anti-French sentiment appears to be shared by neighboring countries as well, like Burkina Faso and Mali, who have since joined this quasi-new military coalition with Niger. France is one of the largest purchasers of uranium from Niger, but the military junta has already announced that they would halt all sales to the French. So first, how is Niger going to make up for the loss of sales of uranium to France? And are there potential clients, others who want to buy this? And secondly, how will France respond? I mean, is this move by Niger enough to actually warrant an actual military intervention?
It is most likely. I mean, the Nigerian military is not as strong as France. It's a very small military, and it doesn't have all the strength. But what they have as strength is now the new focus and then light that's on Niger, which means it's more of a moral ground standing and power than any military force. First of all, the Nigerian will struggle a bit to get a buyer. It's not easy. We know, for example, that South Korea does buy some of the uranium there, the Russians, but also, surprisingly interesting, two Chinese companies are involved there, buying some of those some of the uranium. So the other one is that the French still, it's going to be difficult for the Nigerian government to really stop completely the sale, because they just don't control the mines. That's one thing. So it is very important to say that. So the French will be very unhappy to see that going. So they will react, and they will react very badly, because they're not happy with their supply of uranium being cut off and then being used as a leverage to really threaten them. And they will sort of react as a neocolonial power to assert their power. In fact, the United States is right behind France, because uranium is such an important material for nuclear energy that can also lead, because it may have dual use, both civilian use for electricity and powering manufacturing and plants and so forth, but also for bombs and atomic bombs. And that is a concern largely of the United States and France. But most important and finally, there will be reaction from France and the United States, and perhaps they may not be as visible, but they could be by proxies, funding rebels or jihadist groups to attack this new government.
Now, as you already touched upon, the U.S. has this well-known drone base that they rent out of Niger. They have around 1,100 U.S. military troops there, they say, to help combat terrorism inside the country. What has been the U.S. view or response so far of this coup? Does the junta in Niger, do they actually pose a threat to U.S. or American interests in the region?
Well, the first thing we're hearing already, we know very quickly and early on, Secretary Anthony Blinken has issued a very measured statement. First of all, congratulating the economic community of West African states for the strong stance against unconstitutional orders in Niger. This one came out very quickly. So the U.S. is playing a softer sort of behind-the-scene role to trying to find a peaceful solution, but also attempting to coerce the junta to release President Mohamed Bazoum, but also at the same time tell them, look, you've got to get your act together because we're not quite happy with the kind of thing that you've done with the coup d'etat. I think that's one thing. But most important, what the U.S. is also trying to do is assert its power softly, and sort of having a stick, carrot and stick approach to the junta. And if they don't play ball, there's more likely that the U.S. might, and I say it again, might, by proxy intervene, military proxy intervene. They're probably going to encourage ECOWAS to find a way to intervene one way or another. However, the best case scenario is for the U.S. and France, literally, instead of engaging in military confrontation, which has been a U.S. staple across the world, is to have now consider a peaceful solution or a dialogue with the junta. But we're still waiting to see if that's going to be possible, because the U.S. is not as patient as other nations like China or Russia in terms of negotiation. And this is the fear for the people in the region and across Africa.
All right, coming up next, why are so many civilians in Niger waving the Russian flag? We'll discuss it when we return with Kofi Kouakou. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
The Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
У каждой аварии, у каждой ошибки, у каждой катастрофы обязательно есть фамилия, имя и отчество.
Greater Finland to the Urals, the Nazi theory of racial superiority Finnish style. 4 years of Karelian SSR occupation, 14 concentration camps, 34 prisoner of war labor camps, 10 prisons.
В Карелии был геноцид против русского народа в чистом виде. Они все население поделили на две части: привилегированное карело-финское население и русское население.
Approximately 25,000 people went through the archipelago of Finnish camps, according to official figures.
Здесь был штаб, там были ворота, это вся территория лагеря.
Мария, наша сестра, Надя Ростовцева, Генка Костромин, я вот.
Famine, disease, forced labor, torture by the wardens.
Трупы умерших вывозили на подводах 2-3 раза в неделю. От 25 до 30 гробов за один раз.
Мы до сих пор не знаем точные цифры погибших вообще на территории Карелии, даже Петрозаводского концлагеря.
Thousands of testimonies of crimes and the impunity of criminals.
Нас голыми выгоняли на улицу, садились перед нами надзиратели и фотографировались на память. Это писали люди, которые были там. Это свидетельские показания. И подтверждение того, что это было.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. You may have missed it if you're watching the U.S. mainstream media. They deliberately cut out that crowd footage when showing you the civilians of Niger outside of the presidential palace supporting the military junta. But spotted throughout those rallies, Russian flags. What's up with that? Back with us to explain, African Affairs analyst Kofi Kuaku. So Kofi, since this coup, the mainstream media has at times averted showing the presence of Russian flags at the large rallies in support of the junta. But in reality, the Russian flag is being waved a lot there. And when they do show the flag, it's done cynically. What kind of support has Russia actually provided to Niger to warrant this kind of flag waving? I mean, is there any support, or is this sort of an attempt to discredit the coup and their motives? I mean, it appears this is a populist coup. Why are they carrying Russian flags?
This is one of the most important facts. I had written a small piece on the nature of the symbol of Russian flags in Africa today. It's sort of being used by many Africans, at least those who are very unhappy with what's happening with the colonial masters, especially France, to use Russian flag as what I would call a specter. But what is more important that we need to understand today is that there is now an uprising of the populations across the Sahel who are now being conscious, many of them learning a lot and seeing what's happening around the world through social media. And in fact, the role of social media and the internet has been extraordinary, a profound awakening of most of these people about their own plight, their own pain, their own miseries by former colonial powers like France, has now pushed them on board and seeing what they've seen already in the Central African Republic, also in Mali, in Burkina Faso, and Guinea. They're now coming out, and this burst of sort of protest, but also anger, is also forcing the military to take advantage of it. And this is what we're now calling, at least many of us who are analyzing this, called sort of a militaro citizen revolt, or a citizen revolt led by the military as a new dynamic that's now flashing out across the region. And let me come back to something that you've mentioned, the idea of a sort of anti-French sentiment. It's really not true. If you look at it very well, you know, the French language culturally is dominant. It is used as an official language for many of these former French colonies from Côte d'Ivoire, Senegal, Mali. Now Mali has just decided and refused to use it as an official language. I think Burkina Faso is also considering. So Africans, if not many of them, are unhappy with the French government policies, continues oppression, continues exploitation, continuous use of French power to maintain Africans in poverty, inequality, and then of course having minions of their own that continues to oppress Africans. And this is where we are today.
So the economic community of West African states, this one being led by Nigeria, they've threatened to militarily intervene into Niger. Some of those member states of the ECOWAS, though, they have joined into a sort of military alliance with Niger's coup leaders. So could we actually witness a large-scale war in West Africa or Sahel? Because the ECOWAS doesn't seem really unified on this situation.
Yes, indeed. You're so right. I mean, ECOWAS is fragmented. Many of their members are not in agreement. And there's a great deal of suspicion that ECOWAS is just a pawn of France and the United States forcing a sort of new mandatory or threatening the Niger junta to really give up and then reestablish what's, if you want, called constitutional order, democratic constitutional order. Now, the fragmentation of ECOWAS is understandable because many of the African countries disagree with the economic sanction. Many of them want, they won't say it publicly, but in private, they've seen that ECOWAS's economic sanctions against Mali haven't worked. In fact, 2 weeks ago, they had to really cancel those economic sanctions and ask Mali to join back. And Mali said, no, we are taking a seat back. We think where we are, we're fine. So the borders of Mali are open now. Burkina Faso has also used the lessons learned from Mali to continuously push its own agenda of liberation. Now the Niger group, the Niger junta has also learned from them. In fact, a couple of days ago, one of the envoys of the junta from Niger was in Mali. And they're now building a coalition. They may not be strong militarily, but I think they have a moral uphand and a support of a large group of Africans. Seriously, I think the mainstream media in the Western countries are not showing that uprising that are taking place. People are very angry. They're not happy. And in fact, that's one of the reasons they keep showing Russian flag because they think and believe that the only nation today that can stand up to the West is mainly Russia. China, maybe economically, but it's very rare, and it may not happen that China will sort of come militarily to support Africans. Only Russia might, using perhaps Wagner. And I think this is where ECOWAS is also seen as a weak link, because ECOWAS hasn't been able, beside what they've done in Liberia and in Sierra Leone, they haven't been able to do anything else. And ECOWAS, it's just an economic community organization of West African state. It's not a military organization. So it will be difficult to see how, you know, they will be able to win a war against the Niger government that is now supported by Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea. And now we also hear that Algeria is also playing a supportive role to the Nigerian junta.
Now, there are reports of Algerian top officials flying into Moscow recently, and it looks like they could supply weapons to Niger. Do you have any insight on that?
They were there because, remember, the Russia-Africa summits on the 27th to 28th of July last month was a very important gathering. In fact, the official nature of what happened also hides the new Russian engagement in Africa. And I think the Russians want to double, if not triple, the engagement across the continent, because there's a huge gap that's left by the Western powers that Russia might fail, but also China might fail. So the role of Algeria has been a very, very large partner of Russia, not just only diplomatic, geopolitically, but also in terms of military partnership. But so far, I think Algerians will be very careful to provide military assistance to Niger because they don't want to have a war in that region. Remember, Niger has a border, a very long border with Algeria, and any war there will be a disastrous for the Sahelian region. So everybody is looking at perhaps the best case scenario, which is finding peace. But we know that peace is not easy to find, especially when the United States is behind most of these things. So there's a very big concern about a worst case scenario for a fight. But many of us are hopeful that we'll find a peaceful solution to the Niger crisis.
And what of the reported pipeline project that would be running from Nigeria into the Mediterranean? That would go through Niger and Algeria. What sort of economic impact might that have on the region?
Another pipeline that's been built between Nigeria and Morocco. This one is about oil and gas specifically. And Nigeria and Morocco have been having this extraordinary relationship, which many of us who've been working diligently for Morocco and other places in West Africa have noticed. It will be creating a great deal of trade between Morocco and Nigeria, but also the new pipeline between Algeria and Nigeria or Niger. If it takes place, it will be extraordinary because both countries are also holders of resources such as oil and gas, but also they have some gold, they have some rare minerals that will help to develop this region. In fact, one of the reasons this region hasn't really moved is that they've been underdeveloped, overexploited, and the poverty there have been manufactured by external powers. And that's one of the reasons people are now hopeful that the decline of French power, with also the decline, if not the much lesser control of the United States and the West in that region, will help this region really blossom much, much better than they had before.
So much to unpack here. I wish we had more time. Thank you so much, Kofi. Kofi Kouakou is an African Affairs analyst, formerly of the World Bank. He is now a senior fellow at the Center for Africa-China Studies at the University of Johannesburg. Thank you so much, my friend. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.